Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the fires continuing to blaze in the Brazilian Amazon. They became global news when smoke-filled photographs began circulating on social media.
Urgent pleas to save the rainforest as the Amazon burns. One NASA scientist saying nearly all the fires at Satellite C in Brazil were started by people.
World leaders called them an international crisis at the G7 meeting earlier this week. So, just how bad are they? And why are they happening now? I invited Umer Irfan into the studio. He's an environmental reporter at Vox. He explained what the blazes mean for the health of the rainforest and our fight against climate change. Umer, let's start with the basics. How much of the Amazon is up in flames right now?
That's actually pretty hard to gauge. A lot of the Amazon is covered by tree cover, and the fires are actually burning closer to the forest understory. And so it's a little bit harder to detect the total area burned. But satellite images have shown that we've seen an 84% increase in deforestation this year compared to the same time last year. So it's a pretty significant upswing.
So what's causing this?
In many ecosystems, fires are a natural part. They help restore nutrients to the soil. They help some plants germinate. They're not natural in the rainforest. Almost every fire there has been started by humans. Now, they are a regular occurrence in the rainforest because there are farmers that live in and around it that use it to clear land. But because of policy changes in Brazil, especially, we're seeing a huge uptick in deforested area and an increase in the amount of fires after years of decline.
And this is something that the government has allowed, this deforestation for the farmers to continue. But has it ramped up in recent years?
Yes, Brazil has actually made a lot of progress in terms of curbing deforestation, in terms of reducing fires in recent years. But the fact that we saw such a huge upswing just in the past year since the new administration took over is a pretty alarming signal that there's a political change behind this.
You know, we think of the Amazon forest as so wet.
That's right. But it does have seasons. And right now we're in the dry season, or maybe the not as wet season. So it's a little bit easier to burn because it gets warm and there's a little bit less moisture. Like I said, the fires there are not natural. They do not ignite spontaneously. Somebody has to be behind them. And that's why we see this as an alarming signal of human activity in the Amazon. But the uptick is because of the changes in the administration. The government has basically turned a blind eye to deforestation. And in fact, the current Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, campaigned on exploiting the rainforest. He said that this is a major economic asset for Brazil, and he intends to exploit it.
So how much damage could we be actually seeing to the rainforest?
It's hard to tell right now, but we know that since the 1970s, we've seen about 17% deforestation of the total area of the Amazon. Scientists are worried that if that crosses a tipping point of roughly 25% deforestation, the Amazon rainforest will enter a cascade scenario. They call it a dieback, where the forest does not have enough trees to move moisture through the forest, and eventually it'll start to collapse on its own and degrade into savanna. It's important to remember that the rainforest isn't rainy just because of meteorology. The trees actually generate rainfall. They move a huge amount of moisture into the air. They release chemicals that induce rainfall. And without that mechanism, the forest can start to dry out, and it can also help contribute to droughts and other kinds of ecological consequences.
So does Bolsonaro understand this?
To an extent, I mean, he has acknowledged that, yes, there are major ecological consequences. And over the weekend, he did deploy the Brazilian military to help combat the fires. He's been bowing to some public pressure, both domestically and from other countries as well.
But he is a climate change doubter.
That's right. He's been very skeptical of the science in general. When the Brazilian Space Agency announced the huge upswing in deforestation this year, he called that data lies. He forced the head of the space agency out of his job. So he's been very skeptical of this idea that the environment is something that humans can alter and that any adverse consequences are things that we need to be worrying about.
So he's on the same track as Trump.
Probably worse. I mean, he has been very aggressive about exploiting the rainforest. It's not just he wants to harness the trees, but the people that live there. There's about 1 million indigenous people that live throughout the forest. And he's explicitly said that, you know, he wants to bring them into cities. He wants to take their land. And some recent leaked documents show that there's an aggressive plan for undermining indigenous rights and legal land holdings, specifically so they can exploit the rainforest.
What benefit does the government get when the rainforest burns?
Well, it's not the burning itself, but rather having the land and the resources. There's a huge market for timber abroad. Trees like mahogany, for example, are tremendously valuable. But the main driver right now is cattle ranching. Brazil is the largest exporter of beef in the world. There's a huge demand and growing demand for beef in many other countries, and it requires a huge amount of land. And so there's a very lucrative industry of clearing the rainforest and burning the crops there for pasture land. Another factor is soy. Soy that is grown in deforested areas. About 80% of that is also used for animal feed. So directly and indirectly, animal agriculture has been a big contributor to deforestation. Another factor is mining. There's a lot of mineral resources beneath the rainforest floor, and there's a lot of illegal extraction going on, gold and other kinds of minerals. And that is extremely destructive because they leave behind huge chemical contamination sites that prevent the forest from regenerating on its own.
Bolsonaro has, in recent days, changed his tune. So you're saying he has sent troops in. What are they doing?
Right now, there's some pretty aggressive firefighting measures. There are airplanes that are being used to douse some of the fires. The military is also enforcing a halt on any new fires being put in place. But ultimately, it will require a policy change. The big issue is that the rainforest is huge. It's massive and it's sparsely populated, so it's difficult to enforce any kind of environmental regulations. But people in the rainforest in recent months have seen basically a tacit endorsement from the government, and now they need another signal basically saying that this is not okay.
Give us a sense of the size of the rainforest.
It's about 2.1 million square miles. It is larger than several U.S. states put together, California, Texas, Montana.
Put together.
Yeah. And it spans several countries. It's not just Brazil. Brazil has 60% of the rainforest, but it also extends into Bolivia, into Colombia, into Venezuela, and to Peru. And all these countries have shares of the rainforest and they all benefit from it. There are other ways that you can benefit from the rainforest without cutting it down, like the Brazil nut industry is pretty big. There are other kinds of plants and crops that are being found there. There's an emerging industry of bioprospecting, where people are looking for new plants and animals to see if they can find any industrial, commercial, or even pharmaceutical uses. So there's a lot there that we can use and learn, but there's also a lot we don't know. There are still uncontacted tribes of humans in the Amazon, and it's the largest store of biodiversity in the world. And so if you're going to find a new species, you're very likely to find it in the Amazon rainforest.
Uncontacted people.
Correct.
Living in that forest. You're saying they've never had any contact with the outside world.
As far as we know, yes. And they've been under a policy of benign neglect that essentially the Brazilian government has guaranteed rights to indigenous people that they would protect their lands and essentially leave them alone and allow them to function independently and let them gauge how well they want to integrate with the broader, more urbanized society. But Bolsonaro has taken a more aggressive tack. He specifically said that he wants to bring indigenous people into more urban areas and he wants to take them out of the forest.
Why?
It's part of his cultural and ideological project. I mean, he wants to make Brazil more unified behind this certain kind of ideal. He doesn't really have a very bright view of the indigenous people in general. Some of his past statements have been very offensive about the indigenous people and essentially calling them uncivilized and that they're not really worth protecting or that there isn't anything there worth conserving or preserving.
But they've been living peacefully for all these years. Mm-hmm. And now what would happen to them if they were brought out?
We would lose a lot of knowledge of the rainforest. That's one thing. I actually was in Manaus last month and I was talking to people there. And, you know, they have a tremendous respect for the indigenous people. A lot of people say that, you know, we learned how to live with the rainforest from the indigenous people. They showed us what we could and couldn't eat. They showed us how to build our homes. And there's a tremendous amount of knowledge that we still don't know. One interesting thing from an anthropological perspective, there's a tribe there that has a language that has no natural roots from any other language family in the world. It's a language that has no subordinate clauses in the speech and very limited counting. And so psycholinguistics are just wondering, how do you have a human language language that doesn't have these things that we assume every other language has. And so there's a tremendous amount of human knowledge that we can still gain from learning from these people.
How deeply have you been able to go into the rainforest?
Last month, I went to a research site that is remote and in the middle of the jungle. The scientists there specifically selected this site because they wanted to track the rainforest free from human influence. So it's upwind of Manaus, which is this big industrial city of about 2 million people in the rainforest. And it's, you know, a 2-hour car ride, a 3-hour boat ride away. It's very remote. And they also wanted it to be remote so they could limit access to illegal loggers and any kind of contraband and other kinds of illegal activities. But even there, the scientists were telling me that they're detecting signs of human influence. They can pick up ash and soot from the fires, and they're having a hard time getting a signal of the rainforest in its pristine state as humans continue to alter it. Over there, they've built this giant tower. It's a 325-meter tower that's the largest structure in Latin America. And so from there, they essentially can use instruments at the top of the tower to get a snapshot of a huge area of the forest and measure the functions that it provides, like generating its own rainfall, like a microclimate that it can produce for its environment.
What does it feel like to be in there?
It's very damp, as you can imagine. It is the rainforest. I was there just as the dry season was beginning, but it rained every day. But it is very tranquil. It feels very alive. Everything, if you look closely, starts to move. If you look at a tree branch, you'll see answers scurrying over it. If you wait a few moments, you'll see animals in the understory moving. If you look in the trees, the birds will start to flutter around. And you will hear noises all throughout the day from different birds, from howler monkeys. And it's just this kind of, it's like living inside a zoo, but you know, you're a part of the exhibit.
How long were you there?
I was there for about 5 days. I was staying in a bunk with a bunch of other scientists as well, and they were showing me some of the research that they were performing. And yeah, I was there just to learn a little bit more about how they're tracking the influence of the rainforest on the global climate, but also how changes in the global climate are starting to affect the rainforest.
And that's what I want to get to. People have said how important the Amazon rainforest is to the global climate. Can you spell that out for us?
The Amazon takes in a huge amount of carbon. Because it's alive and because it's a living organism, it takes in CO2 from the air. And then over the course of years and decades, as those organisms decay, it embeds them in the soil. So it ends up being a net sink of CO2. The concern, though, is that if we reach that tipping point of collapse, all that CO2 will come back into the atmosphere. The analogy I like to give is it's sort of like an ice sheet. You can imagine, you know, Greenland, which has this huge chunk of ice on land. If it all melts, it'll raise sea levels by about 20 feet. The Amazon is like that, but for carbon. It's a huge store of carbon. And if all of that gets pumped back into the atmosphere, that's about a decade's worth of human-caused carbon dioxide emissions. Now, it's unlikely that we would lose all of it, but it just shows just how much potential is there and just how much work the Amazon rainforest is doing for us now.
When we come back, more from Umair Irfan.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Now, the rest of my conversation with Umair Irfan, he writes about energy, the environment, and climate change at Vox. So if you have the leader saying, I don't believe in any of this, and yet you have other countries offering money to help with the deforestation, the fires burning, and Bolsonaro says, I'll take the money, but you can't tell me what to do with it. How does this work?
Well, that's the big concern right now. I mean, the rainforest is something that a lot of countries around the world say benefits all of us, but it's mainly within the borders of a handful of countries. And that's just kind of the underlying problem. How do you resolve that distinction? Bolsonaro has said that I don't view this as a global asset. This is our asset. This is ours to exploit. And if your interest in the Amazon is colonialism, right? That's the excuse that he's gave, that, you know, that these foreign countries from abroad, these people want to preserve the rainforest so they can go vacationing in it. So he's had a very dim view of this outside influence and other people telling Brazilians what to do with the rainforest.
But is he now changing his tune?
He has, you know, gone back and forth on this, but the $20 million that was proffered by the G7 over the weekend, he said that now he's open to accepting it with, as you said, the precondition that they get to decide how it's spent. But there are other countries that have other mechanisms in place to help, you know, sustain the rainforest. The United Nations has a mechanism called RED Plus, and countries like Norway and Germany are contributing money to help fund these kinds of restoration and conservation projects. But both Germany and Norway said recently that they're going to withhold funding until they see a change in policy from the Brazilian government. So they're using that as sort of a lever. But when outside countries try to influence your government, I mean, it can be a very difficult thing to reconcile, especially for somebody who's a nationalist like Bolsonaro.
Well, and he can argue, as you said, that perhaps this dieback of the forest is not occurring as quickly as some scientists say it is.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's saying that, you know, the Amazon, while it has been 17% deforested, he said, well, the opposite is that, you know, it's still 80% intact.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've managed to live in harmony with the rainforest and there's still so much left, and it's not likely that we're going to get rid of all of it at any point soon.
But you're saying that the dieback is occurring more quickly now than ever before.
Well, it hasn't occurred yet. The tipping point is about 25%. They're at 17% now, deforestation, and scientists worry that if you lose a little bit more of the rainforest, it won't be able to sustain itself. They're worried that if we continue accelerating the deforestation as we have in the past year, that that won't be sustainable. And even if we do try to pump the brakes, we won't be able to stop the self-destructive cycle in the forest.
How does the forest sustain itself?
The rainfall that it ordinarily gets from, you know, just meteorology, it goes into the soil, then the trees pump it back into the air. A tree can pump about 1,000 liters a day, so the weight of a small car's worth of water. And now multiply that by 800 billion trees in the rainforest, and you have a gargantuan amount of water going back into the air. And each tree is also emitting compounds, these volatile organic compounds. They undergo chemical reactions in the air, and they form these tiny particles that end up as nucleation points for all that moisture. Every raindrop needs a point of nucleation, and the trees provide it for them. And so throughout the rainforest, you have this cycle of rain and then evaporation and then rain, and it keeps continuing over and over, repeating throughout the rainforest. That's a really important mechanism to keep it hydrated. And if you don't have enough trees moving enough moisture, those trees are going to start to degrade, and then they won't be able to move enough moisture. And then the trees downwind of them are also going to degrade, and they won't be able to move moisture. It'll get much drier, flooding will increase, and the ecosystem will start to change completely from a rainforest into a savanna.
What about other rainforests around the world?
There are concerns that other rainforests are being lost as well, and throughout the Congo, throughout Southeast Asia. And they're facing a lot of other the similar pressures as well. There's a tremendous amount of money to be generated by clearing the forest, of harnessing the forest products and also clearing the land. But there are, and because of concerns about climate change, the international community is trying to very aggressively come up with a mechanism to encourage people to benefit financially from keeping the rainforest intact. Now, that requires international coordination. That also requires exchanging money, and those are always very thorny issues. Next month, the United Nations is having a climate summit, and they want countries to get together and come up with more aggressive targets than what they put out under the Paris Climate Agreement in 2015. A key part of that is likely going to be these kinds of forest mechanisms, how countries are going to help other countries keep the forest that they have intact. But of course, there's a thorny political issue when you have a government in those countries that views these international agreements with disdain, and they view these resources as something that is theirs to exploit. How do you exert that kind of international pressure to preserve something that benefits the whole world? That's a difficult question. I'm interested in seeing how they solve that.
How quickly can all these troops that Bolsonaro is moving in there really attack these fires?
Well, these fires are burning in several distinct areas, and they can be detected by satellite, so they can identify where the fires are burning and they can put them out pretty quickly, or they can, you know, use a lot of wildland firefighting techniques like a lot of clearing some of the vegetation to prevent them from spreading further. Because these are started by humans, I mean, this is a pretty easy thing to stop. You just have to tell the people to not do it, or you have to enforce the existing laws on books that prevent
that's
burning.
That's what you've got to do.
Exactly. And so they have put a moratorium on new fires. And because they have now 44,000 troops patrolling the forest, they're going to prevent any more illegal fires from going up as well. But over the long term, is that a sustainable strategy? Is the government willing to put the money and resources behind protecting the rainforest? Bolsonaro also said earlier, we don't have the resources to continue to protect the forest at this level. So the question is there going to be political will in Brazil to invest the resources needed to do this? That might change. Some of the opposition parties have now been pressuring the government, saying they want investigations into why these fires started. People are protesting in major cities throughout Brazil, demanding more aggressive action to protect the forest.
He's only been in there since January of this year. How can all this have happened in just this short period of time?
Well, the Amazon, because it's so big and so vast and so sparsely populated, it's difficult to enforce the laws there. And a lot of the illegal operations there, they saw a friend in Bolsonaro. They saw essentially tacit winks and nudges that essentially the law will not be enforced against them. Bolsonaro's government has handed out much fewer environmental fines. They have cut budgets for environmental enforcement agencies. They have limited some of the tactics of the Environmental Protection Agency in Brazil. The enforcement arm of Brazil's Environmental Protection Agency, for example, used to be allowed to destroy equipment that they found belonging to illegal loggers and miners, and that was a very effective deterrent. And Bolsonaro says that he doesn't want them destroying equipment anymore.
Huh.
So some of the more effective tactics that they've been using to sort of deter this illegal activity, and plus his rhetoric where he talks about how he doesn't view the indigenous rights as something that's a priority, or that he sees that the rainforest is something worth exploiting. Everybody is hearing sort of a go-ahead, and that's kind of what they're responding to. Like, there were farmers recently, there were reports that, you know, they organized a coordinated day of burning of new areas of the forest because, you know, they saw this as basically a salute to the government for allowing them to exploit with impunity.
Talk about what's happening in the Canary Islands, in Alaska, in Russia.
Wildfires are a natural part of many ecosystems,
right.
Not in the rainforest, but even in boreal forests, even in the far north, in Siberia, in Alaska, wildfires do occur there naturally. What's unusual about the fires we've seen this year is that they followed a period of extremely intense heat. We came out of the hottest July on record. And that's not just the northern hemisphere where it's summer. This is the whole planet on average. And in that heat wave, you know, that was just the average temperature. We saw extreme heat in northern Europe, in Alaska, in Greenland. And so that dried out a lot of vegetation. And the consequence of that is that a lot more area is primed to burn. Now, the trend in wildfires we're seeing is that they're burning longer than we've been in years past, and they're covering more of an area. The wildfire in Siberia, for example, is approaching a record area, and the fires that just ignited a couple weeks ago in Alaska, this is very late in the season, and it's pushing the limit of when fires typically burn. Alaska usually starts cooling off around this time of year. So it shows that there are some bigger underlying environmental changes still happening. And in addition to that, humans cause or humans ignite a majority of these kinds of wildfires because we live very close to them. As populations grow, people are building more and more in what's called the wildland-urban interface. And as you have your home closer to woods that are primed to burn, there's a greater likelihood that by mistake you might start a fire. And we've seen that in places like California.
I was about to ask, what about what's going on in this country as well?
That's right. In addition to the warming and the drying we're seeing in some of the mountainous forests in the West that has led to a huge die-off in trees in California, you know, there's been more than 120 million dead trees throughout the state. So that's a huge risk for fire. And in addition to that, California has a housing crisis. And so people are looking for land that is cheap. And that often means land that is very close to the forest, which often means that you're running power lines through those trees. It means you're building roads and all that infrastructure, which means that's much more likely to ignite. But it also means that there's much more infrastructure in harm's way. So humans are contributing to the ignition of these fires. They are contributing to the increasing damage from these fires. And then also through changing the climate, they're changing the underlying fundamentals behind these fires.
So we could expect more of this dieback to go on just in terms of temperatures?
Right. That's what a lot of researchers are concerned about, is that, you know, eventually the temperature will rise so high that it will be outside the growing envelope for many of these forests, or you'll see these forests migrating further and further north, or you'll see the normal patterns changing. And in a lot of ways, it's really hard to predict, but it's not going to be like what we've been used to.
I realize we've been talking about the Amazon, what's going on around the world. Just this week, President Trump has said that he'll weaken the methane regulations. Tell us about the importance of that.
Well, methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. It's about 30 times more powerful than CO2 in terms of trapping heat. And the concern is that these oil and gas operations, particularly hydraulic fracturing, they have a huge potential to leak methane. And right now, they're not doing a good job of monitoring it, so we don't really have a good sense of how much is being leaked. And the Obama-era rule basically said that these companies have to be accountable for this, that they have to keep track of it, and they have to take aggressive steps to limit it. The Trump administration said these rules are burdensome and expensive, and it fits within their pattern of rolling back all kinds of environmental rules, which they also view as burdensome and expensive. So things like CO2 restrictions on power plants, or like fuel economy rules for cars. But the net effect of all of these things is that it increases the human impact on the environment.
How pessimistic are you? You've been watching this for quite a while. Tell me about your own thoughts.
I think the situation is going to get worse before it gets any better. Right now, like in Brazil and the United States, we do need a political change. We need some kind of momentum, both from the top down and the bottom up, in order to change the laws, but also change our attitudes towards the environment and also our role within the world. I mean, climate change is a global issue, and it requires coordinating across borders. But it requires, you know, a country like the United States, which has some of the highest per capita emissions in the world, to kind of lead by example. We really don't have much standing when we tell India and China, which do, you know, emit a significant amount of CO2, but they have much larger populations. And so per person, they're emitting much less. So in order to be able to help other countries and to guide them toward, you know, more efficiency, towards limiting their impact on the environment, we kind of have to lead by example. That's the loudest and most powerful thing that we can do.
So if you had 5 minutes with the President of the United States, who is not a climate change believer, what would be the most important arguments you could give him?
Well, he seems to talk a lot about jobs, and it's important to recognize that renewable energy is one of the largest growing job sectors in the United States. Fossil fuels are on the decline. The coal industry is not going to be coming back. But this is where the jobs are, this is where the technology is, and this is where the United States already has a leadership position in terms of research and development, in terms of manufacturing, and this is where the U.S. can dominate a global industry if it is willing to take the leadership role here. And this is also a place where other countries definitely do look up to the United States. They definitely follow the U.S.'s lead when it comes to environmental rules, when it comes towards deploying energy. And where we go, other countries will follow. And if he wants to be a leader on the global stage and respected as such, this is one powerful way to do that.
We've been talking about the forests themselves. In addition to the indigenous people, how do you see this climate change affecting us?
Well, in Brazil, for example, I mean, the reason why it got such big attention was that the smoke from the fire started going over major cities, and it became impossible to ignore. Now, cities like Sao Paulo, like, they've had major droughts in recent years, and scientists are saying that the deforestation in the Amazon could be contributing to that, and they're worried that that will worsen it. So we're not that far removed from nature. Like, we might view this as something that is very far away, but it is integral to so many of our things that we take for granted, the rainfall, the temperature, and all these other things.
But how about us here in the U.S.? Why should we be worried about the rainforest?
Well, the rainforest, it is cushioning the blow of everything that we are putting onto the environment. And there's a lot that we can learn from as well. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about this idea of bioprospecting. It is the largest concentration of biodiversity in the world. There's so much we still don't know, and there's a lot that we could still benefit from. And the rainforest itself, I mean, it's part of a larger global climate system, and we're still learning about that. For example, we know that dust from the Sahara Desert crosses the Atlantic Ocean via trade winds and helps nourish the rainforest. And we're still learning now how the mechanism of evaporation and temperature that the rainforest exerts, how that influences other parts of the world. We don't know the full extent to which that happens, and we're still learning that. And it would be a shame to lose that before we figure it out, and potentially lead to some sort of unintended consequences.
Humer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane.
That's all for today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer this week is Natalie Urib-Lifker. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.